This is a paid message from GoFundMe. Meet Juan Naula. When his son was hospitalized for a viral infection, Juan started a GoFundMe to pay for medical expenses.
It was $5,000 to pay the bill for my son, and I needed only 22 hours. It was amazing. People really trust on GoFundMe.
How did Juan raise $5,000 in less than a day? He posted a short video on GoFundMe, telling his story in 30 seconds.
30 seconds. Be specific, be quick, and tell what are you going to be using the funds for. I was nervous to do it because it doesn't feel okay to ask money, but you shouldn't be nervous. Sometimes you just have to do it and see the results. We were able to save my son's life. Thanks to GoFundMe that we still have my son with us.
Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This message reflects one person's experience.
I'm delighted to be joined by Off the Ball's Darren Ochten ahead of the Wales game in the men's Six Nations for Ireland, and obviously looking back over the games we've had so far against France, Italy and England. Dara, thanks a million for joining me. You were out at Twickenham last week. I'd say that was probably one of the highlights of your career covering rugby so far.
Ochten, I'd go as far as saying one of the highlights of my life, I think. An unbelievable occasion. And I suppose going into it, I wasn't as optimistic. I did get my prediction in there just before the game started on News Talk that I did think we were going to win, but by 2 or 3 points, certainly not the margin of victory we ended up with. But one of the highlights of my career. But as I say, one of the best weekends I've had, I have to say.
I think probably one of the images that stands out to me most, and probably to a lot of people as well, is that really famous image now of the Irish coaching staff celebrating and Kate Middleton just behind them kind of looking on, kind of not expecting that this is how today would have ended. For you on the ground there, when you got to half time, what were you thinking?
So I was sitting alongside Andy Dunn, who was our pundit on the day. Basically, the message in between us was just, there's no way they can keep this up. Like, this is absolutely glorious as is, and they've played an absolutely perfect game, but there's just no way we can do that in the second half. And I suppose England came out kind of kicking strong enough in the second half. So we were kind of thinking like, oh, here we go. Once Ollie Lawrence scored that try and pulled it back a little bit, we were kind of thinking, right, now England can kick on. But I suppose the way we just came back and we settled ourselves and Crowley kicked two penalties in a row really just calmed the team. And then, yeah, obviously kicked on again second half and ended up with the result we did. But halftime, I think, just like the rest of the stadium, I was just in pure disbelief. Mm. I haven't seen an Irish performance like that in years. I'd say the closest we've had in recent memory is the South African second test. I know a few people have referred to that. The kind of Frawley drop goal game after we got beaten well enough in that first test and not too many people gave us a shout and we had plenty of injuries going into that second test. But we pulled it out of the bag. And I think that was quite similar to the England game, not in terms of scoreline or anything like that, but just the cohesive nature of our performance and how on it everyone was. And yeah, it's going to be hard to back that up now in the next two games. But I think I asked Andy Farrell, the presser, after the game, and like knowing that he's given the Irish people such a great day, does that just make that result so much better? And he was like, yeah, like it's just, that's what's important in these things. So as important as it is to look ahead to the rest of Six Nations, we should definitely take that game in isolation as well. It's just like a brilliant moment in Irish rugby and Irish sporting history.
Mm-hmm. How do you, I suppose, analyse that looking back? Because it seems like, I suppose, for anyone looking from the outside in, even passively, that it seems like, oh, Ireland have completely changed tactics and form from 1 week against where they just about scraped the line over Italy to going over to England and completely steamrolling over who would have been before this kind of one of the tournament favourites, you know? You know, how do you equate that up? Because I know the simple answer for a lot of people would be, oh, well, Sam Prendergast is out and Jack Crowley came in and now all of a sudden we're doing fantastic and that's the end of the story. But there seems so much more out of that. Like, you've got the whole Balakoon angle and how he's kind of come into his own and really, like, he talked about, I suppose, directly after that, how he felt maybe his Ireland career had been over and, like, now he's got this revitalisation and could probably challenge for even when Mack Hansen comes back to retain in that spot. Like, for you, what do you think was the key standout for that England game? I suppose that kind of separates it from those games beforehand.
I think as great as we were as well, I think it needs to be pointed out how poor England were on the day as well. That was definitely a key factor. in the victory. And I mentioned cohesion. The way they were set up in defence was very unlike them. England are known for kind of their rush defence and physicality at the line, and it was nowhere to be seen. There's a lot of soft shoulders out there in Twickenham last Saturday, and it's been pointed out a lot that it was Ellis Genge, absolutely not himself. I suppose their scrum was the only thing that really operated well for them, but we didn't give them many shots at the scrum because our handling and our how we controlled possession and used possession was very spot on. In terms of our own performance, I kind of noticed during the game was the high ball, and something I kind of pointed out before the game I thought was going to be key. And it's an interesting one because obviously, if we look back to that France game, that was a complete disaster, and we kind of even focused on it even more so. And Tommy O'Brien obviously was playing that game and caught a lot of flack in the aftermath because, of course, he's at the very centre of the high ball not going to plan because they didn't come up with much ball. But if you look at even the England side of things and the high ball, the one high ball that they really came off more positive on was when Jamie Osborne dropped the ball. I think it was Finley Beelam catches it and he's offside. Then England get a penalty off the back of that kick. And they like 60 to 75 seconds later, they're in under the post with Ollie Lawrence. So that kind of, for me, quantified how key that whole part of the game was. And like you said, Balakoon in the air was immense. But what it does then is when you can secure that high ball, and even if it's just a tap back and you can retain that possession, it gives you such a good platform to work off of. And that's what we saw. We saw Ireland able to play their game once we get the ball in hand, go through a few phases, break down the defence, that obviously wasn't firing on today. That's what we can produce. I think that was the major issue in France and also a bit in Italy as well. Even though high ball was a little bit better in the Aviva that day, we just weren't getting the ball. And it's as simple as that, really. You need possession to win rugby games.
Two games left. Triple Crown is still on. Wales next week and then Scotland after that. You know, is it a bit unfortunate, I suppose, that there's a week break in between this game and the Wales game where you feel like maybe the momentum could have carried over to this weekend, but instead we kind of have to push back and say, I know we have to wait another week. Whereas Wales, I suppose, they had a really good end to their game against Scotland. They probably will go back, analyse what went wrong in that first half and come back and probably be even stronger.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, Wales, I suppose. Like, I even thought in their game against France that they were quite impressive in the first half. I know the scoreline at the end doesn't really suggest that, but they have some green shoots there. They have some good players. There's obviously a lot going on in Welsh rugby at the minute that's beyond this conversation that needs to be sorted out. It goes far beyond the pitch, but I think they do have dangerous players. I would consider us pretty heavy favourites going into that game. But if we just think back to last year, we probably were in the same boat that Wales were still in this situation and we were kind of firing pretty decent and they came in and they rattled us. Now, albeit they were home that game, but that game could have very easily been lost. And like you say, like with the week off, I don't think that benefits us. I think we were taking serious momentum off the England game and we haven't come away with too many niggles or injuries either, which obviously a week like that can help kind of recover the squad. But the only injury is James Lowe, of course, and he's now out for the Six Nations. So we're not going to take too much from this week, I don't think, other than maybe iron out a few mistakes we may have made at Twickenham. But like you say, Triple Crown's still on, which is obviously always a bonus. Not the main aim of the tournament, but always you'll take that if you can get it. But the thing is, Scotland, Triple Crown is still on as well. They haven't won it in 35 years. And if there's ever a time to do it, they have a great team there. They're not in amazing form, really. That game against Wales, they very easily could have lost that game. Probably should have. But they look at this as a serious chance now to go and break that streak. They haven't won a Triple Crown since 1990. So, great chance for them. But I suppose they have France up first. So we'll see how that game goes this weekend. But the Welsh game, really interesting. But yeah, I'd see us still as heavy favourites going into it, especially at home.
Obviously, you mentioned that injury for James Lowe. Does that, how much of a factor will that play in prep? Does it, is it that big of a deal, or can we kind of look past it?
I think it is a pretty big deal. Like, I think Tommy O'Brien goes into that left wing spot, even though he's played very little rugby there for Leinster, and particularly for Ireland. He's never played there other than the game at Twickenham. So he makes that decision a little bit easier, but obviously that depth, you want options going into games like this. I know we're heavy favourites going into this game, but every Six Nations game is a big game. So you want options, you want depth in your team. If Tommy O'Brien picks up a knock during the week, who's the obvious choice? This probably goes back to Stockdale then, who hasn't played since the France game and wasn't great that day. I'm a big Stockdale fan, but you want your best players playing, and I think Tommy O'Brien is that form winger. But yeah, a big shame for James Lowe. I know he came back from injury just recently and had just found form again, it felt like in the last two games. And to go and get an injury like that, he had surgery there earlier in the week as well, which is just not what you want to hear, I suppose, at his point in his career. So Andy Farrell will have some decisions to make around that, but I'd imagine Tommy O'Brien slots in at left wing there.
Of course, I suppose the other conversation that's come out this week regarding Andy Farrell is that potential move to the Saracens after the World Cup. Does that, I know that Simon Easterby said that there's probably, they haven't really looked at it or haven't discussed it, but you'd imagine that there has at least been, I suppose, rumblings around the backroom coaching team about what's going to happen after this World Cup. And does that, I suppose, influence what happens in the next few weeks?
Yeah, it's tough to know. All the players have social media. Like, they're all seeing these type of things around the place, and a lot of them do read articles. And I often think with things like this, there's no smoke without fire. And not to say that there's been anything concrete. Maybe it's just a suggestion or a couple of conversations, but it makes a lot of sense, really, doesn't it? Andy Farrell obviously is ingrained in Saracens history, and as is his son. And one of the things that has been mentioned is the lure of Owen Farrell potentially joining the coaching staff when he's finished up playing. So, of course, I'd imagine that's very attractive to Andy. But yeah, it's hard to know with the figures being thrown around there. Saracens, a team that just this week are kind of in a bit of financial trouble with the RFU, it seems. So I don't know about the total being thrown around there. But certainly, I said it on Off the Ball Breakfast earlier during the week that I think he's gone after this World Cup. And I don't think that's because he's not having a good time. I just think he's a guy who has a lot of ambition and at some point does have to move on. And two World Cup cycles, to be honest, I think regardless of how it goes, I see him going back because it feels like perfect timing as well. And the suggestion is that if he was to leave and go to a club, that club would still facilitate his ambition to take over Lions again for 2029, isn't it? So yeah, I could definitely see him going. We'd love to keep him, of course. He's been amazing over the last, I suppose, 6 years as head coach and 10 years being involved in Irish rugby, and would be a massive loss. But at some point, he does probably have to move on, doesn't he, for his own ambition? But yeah, he said before it'll be a family decision when he does go.
Does this,
We'll
I
wait and see
suppose,
what that is.
Yeah, but on this story as well, does it provide almost a bit of a reprieve for the players as well coming up to this Wales game that the focus isn't so much on them as it is on Farrell now?
Yeah, potentially. It's hard to know because you could look at that one or two ways in that it's a bit of extra noise around the camp, which is always not helpful. Like, people may be getting distracted from, or energy is getting pulled away from the one goal that matters, and that's to beat Wales at the weekend. But I feel like it's a very sophisticated and positive environment that these type of things wouldn't creep in too much and wouldn't affect the players a lot. I think there's a lot of self-assured players in there that are happy in that camp, and we've heard so much about Andy Farrell's kind of and how he's created such a positive environment and how present the players' families are in camp and how happy everyone generally is. And we hear about his emotional intelligence that he has. I don't think he'll play too much of a factor in their preparation, to be honest.
And finally, we'll talk on Easterby's comments about how Wales will probably love the fact that people have written them off coming into this game. You know, does that again add another level of pressure to Ireland that they're expected to overperform in this fixture and get back on track? But I suppose Wales are probably in a different position to where Italy were kind of early on in the tournament, where people were thinking Italy could come and get a result.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think as Irish people, we like to think we're the underdogs in every fixture, regardless of the sport. That was kind of put to Andy Farrell going into the England game, where of course we were by the bookies underdogs, and he kind of said that he wants that to be completely irrelevant. That's not how his team is thinking. That's not how he's thinking. He goes into every game thinking they can win. So I don't think it plays, again, I don't think it plays a factor in our preparation too much. But I think for Wales, I suppose they're getting used to the underdog tag. There's not too many games they'll play in the next few years that they won't be underdogs. So I don't know how much motivation they get off that game in, game out. But I think last year they definitely felt there was some media talk around the place that drove them on, and they got a bit out of that, and we saw that in their performance. Does that carry on from last year? Maybe. But I do think they probably think they've been close a couple of times already in the Six Nations to finding a good performance, and Scotland obviously being the closest, only a couple of points in that. So I think they'll feel like they still have a win in this tournament. Whether that's this weekend or not is another thing. It's a tall ask against an in-form Irish side, but I do think there are some green shoots in that Wales side, and they've a good head coach in Steve Tandy and some decent players coming through. They just need to find a win. Essentially, that'll do a world of good for them.
Do you anticipate, I suppose, any major changes to the team that beat England coming into this match?
Yeah, I'd imagine it might be two or three changes, I suppose. As you say, Wales kind of taking on that Italy role that they played over the last couple of years as the team where you tend to see a bit of rotation in the opposition team. I don't know where that is, to be honest. Obviously, I mentioned Tommy O'Brien will come in for James Lowe by necessity, but I wonder, did it change something in the centres with McCluskey having played three full games and playing a lot of rugby for Ulster? I imagine I was speaking to him in the aftermath of the England game, and I could just tell he's just absolutely wrecked. Just he played so many minutes so far at the Six Nations and so many quality minutes that the guy probably needs a break, whether that happens or not, because we don't really have too many options in the centre. Obviously, Bundiaki back this weekend. Maybe they even just give McCluskey the start and take him off after 55 minutes and give Bundiaki a run out. I'd expect maybe to see one or two changes in the front five, particularly the front row. I imagine they probably want to see more from another loose head. I'd say potentially Michael Milne might get another shot off the bench, even Tom O'Toole in again. But yeah, I don't think it'll be wholesale changes, though. I don't think they look at Wales as a minnow of any sorts, that despite having a pretty poor record over the last couple of years in all competitions, that there's still a team of quality, and you can never really underestimate a Wales team that potentially is motivated going into this.
Absolutely. Well, all the conversation around Irish rugby at the moment, there'll probably be a completely different story come this time next week. But Darragh Smith-Nocton, thank you so much for joining me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
And you, Adrian. Thanks.
Wendy's new Biggie Deals lets you choose whatever you're in the mood for. It's like a music mixing board of deals, and you're the producer. Go with some chill folk music with a JBC in the $4 Biggie Bite snack. Try the drum and bass of deals with a double stack in the $6 Biggie Bag. Or go full-on sandwich symphony with an $8 Biggie Bundle, the grand finale of snacking. And the best part? They all come with napkins! $4, $6, and $8 Biggie Deals how you want them. At Wendy's.
Price and participation may vary. Single items at regular price. Prices may be higher in Alaska, California, and Hawaii.